Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Welcome to another Rahalastapa Book Club. It's the most guests we've ever had in a book club. I think we've only ever had one before. We are joined by some of the QI elves, James, Anna, and Alex. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Oh, very good. It's lovely to see you all. Are you in QI Towers right now?
We are, HQ.
I know behind Alex there's a huge bookshelf, and it looks like it could be one of those fake backgrounds that they all invented at the start of Zoom, but that is real.
They're all books.
Are they all books that have come out of QI, though, or are some of them other books?
No,
we haven't written them.
We haven't really written any of them. we did not write the 1911 version of the Encyclopedia Britannica. In case you're wondering.
Chortle Awards, you might be able to see those over Alex's shoulder as well.
I've got so many of those, I can't find a shelf to put them on. Well, lovely to have you all. We are talking about your book, 222 QI Answers to Your Quite Ingenious Questions. Formerly published as Funny You Should Ask 2. Is that right? Again.
Yes, that's right. Again. Yes,
so right. You're doing a very clever thing straight away, which is making everyone's grandma buy them the same book twice.
Well, it's not quite the same book. It has more in it, we should say. More questions and more answers.
Even cleverer, so the completists have to have... Well done. I know, I've... I've released emergency questions books with the same questions in, so you know that's it's a fantastic technique. Does this book come out? I mean, obviously you spent the last however many millions of years coming up with facts and
interesting stuff. But this book comes out of the Zoe Ball breakfast show, right?
Yeah, that's right. So how long have we been doing that? Probably 3 years now.
And yeah, 3 or 4 years.
Radio 2, every Wednesday morning, the curious weirdos who have questions bopping around their heads that they need to know the answers to, they get in touch with Zoe Ball, and she gets in touch with us and tells us to answer them. And this is a sort of compilation of their weird and wonderful questions.
Yeah, right. Also children as well as curious weirdos.
Children can still be curious.
That's weirdos. A pretty big Venn diagram intersection, I think.
Hey, curious weirdos are our favourite kind of
yeah.
people.
That's fair.
Without them, we'd have nothing.
Right, so that's the selection process. It is actual questions that you have been asked on the show.
These are the best of the best questions and the best answers. Yeah.
It's not all, it's some that we sort of battered around ourselves. Yeah. I think about a quarter of them, or maybe a bit less than that, are ones that we came up with, and then some that listeners asked.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's a lovely idea. It's a great idea. I think I love books like this. I've come up with one of my own, which is slightly similar, which is to answer impossible questions that children have asked, so that actually don't have an answer. Which you do get into a little bit. There's a question about the Tooth Fairy, for example. How much does the Tooth Fairy spend every year? There's a few things like that, but these are questions that do have answers.
They are, for most of them do have answers, yeah. But like with the Tooth Fairy, I think we looked at some studies about how much people are given around the world, but really it was kind of an excuse to just write about the Tooth Fairy around the world and how, you know, in France it's a mouse, and in Nigeria, I think it is, they take their tooth and they put some excrement in their hand and throw it away and then run away, and this is supposed to be good luck and things like that.
So, what a lovely bedtime tradition.
And it's quite shocking how high people are, how much the Tooth Fairy is giving some children. My children don't get as much as the average children, certainly in America, get, I wouldn't say. So.
Do they not? They should be starting a union and trying to get a bit more out of you.
Well, I don't. Why does the Tooth Fairy give some kids different amounts than others? That's the question I want to know.
Yeah, it's... get in touch with Mick Lynch, guys. Sort it out.
Yeah, you need to factor inflation in as well, I think.
I think that's the delight of this book, is that the offshoot, and often just the little facts you throw in, pretty much straight away, I think on the first page. I love just the little facts. There's one about ladybirds that I liked straight away. Let me see if I can find it. The Welsh for ladybird translates as short red cow. That's a fantastic opening fact.
It's a better name than the English, because ladybird, they're neither ladylike or birds.
No. But I think that's what we mostly love doing, is being asked a question and then going off on 100 different tangents. And so, we sort of try to slip in as many weirdo facts. Why do I keep using the phrase weirdo? facts as we can. I remember, I don't even think this is in the book, it's just because we used the word ingenious in the title. I mean, this is going to sound very dry unless you're an etymology nerd, but genius and ingenious come from completely different origins, which I never knew, and I find that incredible.
Is that right? Yeah. I think the genius wasn't that it was some kind of spirit that you would get inside a person.
Oh, like a genie.
But I think it was only men who had genius, and
well,
I think
remembered.
Women had another thing that wasn't genius.
Oh, no, idiocy. Yeah. Yeah.
Hysteria, I think it's called.
I admit it. That's exactly right. Yeah, there was a spirit, which is where we get genie, and that was sort of bestowed genius on you, whereas ingenious comes from a completely different Latin root, which gives us the word engine, for instance. Anyway, so there we go. You see the first word of the title, and immediately we're just...
If you want to talk about something in the book, I think in this book is the thing about how inflammable and flammable have the same meaning. But actually, we found that it's a very, very slightly different meaning. One of them means to set fire to something, and the other one means to be on fire.
Ah, to inflame and flame. I suppose because if you flame, you're flaming yourself, aren't you? But if you inflame something, you inflame something else. Is that it?
But if you're flaming, that's just like being super gay.
Flaming, yeah.
But there is a lot of that, I suppose, isn't there? And a lot of these facts, when you're looking at the derivation of phrases and things like that, I mean, sideburns is an interesting one, that just things get swapped around. So that's based on someone called Burnside. And then just at some point, because they are on the side, I guess people just started calling them sideburns instead of burnsides. It's it's sort of that is endlessly fascinating how language evolves and changes and the different roots that it comes from. There's a lot in that, isn't there?
Definitely is. I know, like, for instance, when we do QI, the TV show, and we send scripts to Sandy, Sandy always goes through and does a pass and kind of adds her own facts. And etymology is the one thing that she loves, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like she'll just go through all the words and go, oh, this is an interesting etymology. So is this. So is this.
Yeah. And what's nice about one like Sideburns, which is from a real person, definitely called Burnside, we've got the evidence, is that you can pin it down, can't you? Which is so hard to do with a lot of some of the ones in this book. Or if you've got like Happy as Larry, where did that come from? So often we just never know. They're lost in the mists of time. So it's nice when you get that concrete Mr. Sideburn, Mr. Burnside.
And it's really weird when somebody invented something and they've actually got the name of the thing they invented.
Yeah.
Like, that's so satisfying, but never usually true. Although there was a guy who invented the tram, was a guy called George Train. Is that right?
I think he ran. Yeah. Which
is really unsatisfying, I think. Yeah.
Well, I say everything's. My daughter, whenever my daughter says who invented this, I just say Ian, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Has that ever been right?
I think Ian Greggs started up Greggs. So I think Ian Greggs is the CEO of Greggs.
Yeah. Oh, I found the other day that apparently the Broccoli family, you know, Barbara Broccoli, the Bond producers, they had something to do with actual broccoli.
They invented broccoli.
I think maybe they brought it to into shops or something. Yeah, but they're like actually connected to real broccoli.
No.
Because I was looking into it because I was trying to find out what Tenderstem broccoli is, and Tenderstem turns out is also like a brand name. It's like a copyrighted or like patented type of broccoli.
Wow.
So yeah,
Anna and I have a big argument, don't we, about who invented, is it the blanket?
Mr. Blanket in the 11th century or something. Yeah, it's ongoing. It'll never be proven either way.
But yeah, there was definitely a guy called Mr. Blanket who was selling blankets in around the Bristol area in the 11th century.
And yet James is skeptical.
But as I think you say in this book, the surnames only came up because, you know, people started being called by whatever they were doing. So that could actually be the other way around. It could be Ian. I'm called Ian, but I sell blankets, so now I'm called Ian Blanket. That's the
blanket man.
All right. You've made your allegiance clear.
So what's the? I mean, obviously, for both the radio show and the book, what level of proof and research do you have to go to make sure it's definitely right? You're obviously cross-checking against several different things, right?
Yeah, well, that's for sure. we have the QI standard of we really try and make everything as correct as possible. We sometimes make mistakes like everyone does, but hopefully fewer than most people do. But for the book especially, once it's come to this stage, it's gone through so many different levels.
Yeah.
So we've got... If the QI elves, there's more than a dozen of us, and everyone contributed to this book and wrote first drafts, but then it would go through a second draft and a third draft, and each one of those people is trying to prove it wrong. And so we hope that after that kind of sieve of elves, that everything is more or less right in there. But, you know, people do make mistakes.
It's pretty terrible for office morale as well. Like, most of our business is trying to prove that everyone else is doing a bad job.
It really is. Yeah.
But they're very succinct, all of these, you know. And some of the questions are pretty full-on and difficult and philosophical. Where is last Wednesday is a pretty philosophical question that someone could write a whole book about, which you get down to a page or so. So it is...
That's John Lloyd, creator of QI, is the one who takes main responsibility for the more philosophical ones, I think. Yeah.
I reckon, Richard, you've probably interviewed John over the years,
I have,
right?
Yeah.
You probably know him. I reckon you could go through this book, and if I told you there were three or four entries that John Lloyd originally wrote, you would be able to pick them out immediately.
Yes,
and that's one of them.
That's probably true. Yeah, he asked me about the chemical composition of the carrot on Rallis, but which briefly became an emergency question, but there weren't many funny answers to it, and the actual answers is quite boring.
Wow. Ouch. So he's not listening.
We have three chapters of that in this book.
You're right, though. Some of the questions were massive, actually. Sometimes you'll get asked a question and you think, good, I'll spin that off in an hour. I remember the one on this one that I probably could write a novel on is if Rome wasn't built in a day, how long did it take? Yeah. You realize, well, when did it start being built? When did it finish being built? What do we count as a building?
It encompasses all of Roman history, really. Yeah.
So I wrote the history of Rome and then siphoned it down to a page.
And that's a very difficult one as well, because the beginnings of Rome are obviously largely in myth anyway. So, you know, you can find the earliest.
Exactly.
But of course, it's a philosophical one as well, because does a city ever, until a city is left and desolate, it's still being built, right? So it's still,
yeah, it's very hard to
Rome
define.
Is still being built to this day.
Never finished.
One of the ones I wrote was what's the most expensive object in the world, or what's the most valuable thing in the world? And that was one that has actually, it has so many different answers, because it depends what you think. If you go by substance, you could pick like antimatter. And then if you go by object, you could pick what counts as a single object. There's a huge multi-billion pound super yacht that's being built somewhere. But on the other hand, the most valuable object by weight is the 1 cent magenta stamp, which is the world's rarest stamp.
Yeah,
there's one of it left in the world.
Worth about $9 million.
I think it's from New Guinea. Exactly. It's not worth a huge amount in itself, but it's so small and light that by weight it makes it by far and away the most valuable material on Earth. I think it's the only subject, because I've found recently it's the only stamp missing, the only major stamp missing from the royal stamp collection.
Really?
Yeah, which
really?
Must be so annoying for the royal family.
Imagine someone's got it and they just send a birthday card one day. And that recipient will never know.
If I were them, though, I think that's a good reason to like start a crusade or something. Like, if you're the royal family and you haven't done one for ages,
but also
I would go
royal
and get it.
Stamp collection.
Yeah, the Royal Philatelic collection. Yeah, it's a huge, like, it's like it's the best. I think it's the biggest collection in Europe or something, or maybe the world.
Yeah, but they get most of them sent to them for free because their faces are on it. So, you know, it's not really.
They get the first draft. Also, they probably just mock them up themselves, just print out a small picture.
Yes, just take a photo, put it on. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, also that stamp must be possibly the thing that's gained most value, you know, from its original price to what it's worth now. There can't be
one cent,
to whatever billions of pounds is. There can't be much that's gained that much in cost since it began. But there's loads of things I liked about it. Some things I think I guess I knew. But then other, the thing I never, it's remembering these things. And this is why this book's great to have on hand, because it is sort of succinct. Let me see, what was that? I quite like the fact that water isn't wet. I thought that's, you know, that was just in passing.
It is. Well, there's also that it's not, you can get extra wet water.
Yeah.
That firemen's use. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea is that something is wet if it has water on it, but water can't have water on it because then it just becomes part of the water that it's on. And so it's a bit of a technical one, but it's, you know, I think we ran it on QI just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those where we read that for the first time. One of the researchers came up with it and we just thought, Alan is going to hate this.
It makes you angry when you hear it. And that's what we're here for, to make people angry.
I'm more angry that I'm not getting the wettest water that's available.
Yeah, was the wettest water for firemen?
It reduces the surface tension. They add a chemical that reduces the surface tension, so it flows faster, and you can get more out the hose.
Yeah,
What
would you do if you had some wetter water? What would you use for Alan?
Drink it faster, I guess.
Is that what you're always thinking whenever you have a drink? You think, I wish I could drink this.
Not nearly viscous enough. Yeah.
It goes through you a bit quicker.
But when you like, when you empty a bottle into the sink, it always takes ages, and you're always shaking around, and like, it's just really annoying. And
I mean, it doesn't take that. It doesn't take that much of my time up. It's not so much.
I guess I'm busier.
You could fill a bath,
that's true. Yeah, baths take ages to fill. You could fill a bath really fast.
I thought the other day I was in. This is so stupid, but I went to an Airbnb. And the water pressure was really good. And I thought I should put that in the review because it's such an important thing to have good water pressure.
Is this fact that James is now completely middle-aged? No, that was like the highlight of your holiday.
It really was.
Mold on the ceiling. 5 stars, water pressure.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
One of the things that I had an extra question for, but this is very difficult to answer. I mean, impossible to answer, really. There's an entry about if you clone yourself, you wouldn't have the same fingerprints as the clone would have different fingerprints.
Yes. Oh, that's so interesting, that one.
Yeah, that's interesting. My question, we can talk about that as well, but my question on top of that is, in the infinite, you know, because a clone of you does not have the same personality as you necessarily, right? So it's not the same soul inside it. But everyone talks about this infinite universe, if there's an infinite number of universes, you are doing everything that's possible to do. But surely there's an infinite number of possible things. You know, you might have the same makeup in DNA terms, but you might not have the same soul. And is that quantifiable? And that's what I want the physicists to answer.
Wait, what's your question?
My question is that I think even if there's another version of you somewhere in another universe that's the prime minister or whatever, that they won't have the same insight, whatever's inside you, they won't have the same personality and soul. Let's call it soul, which I don't think it is.
Yeah.
There'll be a different person inside, so it's not you any more than your twin brother is you. No.
So it would look a bit like you.
Yeah, yeah.
But you wouldn't like turn up and you both be thinking the same things because you've had different experiences, and what you think is down to your experiences more than your DNA.
Yeah,
and also, I don't think twins, if you gave them exactly the same experiences, would then be thinking in tandem, you know, they would still have different personalities. So it's more...
Although...
Yeah, go on.
Sorry, no.
You're the experts.
I was gonna suggest a possible counter-argument that in the world where there are infinite universes, then, of course, there is an identical version of you who's had all the exact same experiences and is the same person. And I think a lot of physicists would say that is the same thing. And we do a thing where there's an app called Universe Splitter, which if you can't make a decision about something, if you're arguing with your spouse or something, you just split the universe. And what that does is, and it goes to scientists at CERN, every time you do it, it bounces off a computer system at CERN and it splits the universe in that moment. And it takes a version of you in one universe and a version in the other. And if you're deciding between whether to have tea or coffee, it gives one coffee and one tea. And the way I do this with my husband, and he always uses it.
Do you argue a lot about whether to have tea or coffee?
Constantly.
Sorry, what a waste of CERN resources. I can't believe this exists.
But the justification is to make you feel better. If you lose in this universe, the you in the other universe has won.
Actually, according to the multiverse theory, I think when you make that decision, that's when the two universes are created.
Ah.
So it's not like there's a you in the other universe.
Yes.
You in this
universe.
Yeah,
that's
suddenly
right,
this universe becomes two, and then one's a tea, one's a coffee.
I don't buy the... I think there can be infinite number of universes where an infinite number of stuff happens and it isn't. It doesn't cover everything. The minute one thing, there are things that can't possibly happen. Like, I'm not going to get a phone call in any universe that's up to this point exactly the same, where someone says, Rich, you've got to come and play football for England right now. We need you. That's not going to happen. So it's not going to happen. There's no situation where, you know, this. And so if it means one thing can't happen, there's plenty of things you can say, well, that will never actually happen. People won't make that decision. I was thinking about.
I agree.
I was thinking about Richard Osman marrying one of his contestants on House of Games. And I thought, you know, in another universe, maybe that would, maybe he would have chosen me and all the House of Games. And we would have just got married. But everything would, and we'd both have had to, like, completely change our attitude to each other, suddenly discover our sexuality had changed. And
do you
decide
think perhaps
get divorced. Rich,
do you think your performance on House of Games was not quite good enough? That
I think, I think it intimidated him. It was too. But now I've started thinking about the universe where I wake up in bed every morning with Richard Osman, and I actually do quite like the idea. So maybe that's not a good example. Maybe that one has happened.
I don't know if he's going to be coming back on your show after hearing this. I think that might make him a little bit uncomfortable, but good luck with it.
I'm jealous that, you know, I thought I was a good contestant, but apparently not good enough for Richard Osman.
You always get a Richard Osman themed prize, don't you, on that show?
Yeah. Well, Ingrid very much did.
A night of passion with.
a lifetime. The rest of your life with Richard Osman. Good. Let's move on. I tried to write a sitcom about alternate universes, so I think about it a lot, but it does my head in. There's more prosaic and interesting, you know, and down-to-earth things. There's a lot of things about, like, how to wash a raspberry, for example. I was very impressed with that answer. I didn't know. I've been washing raspberries wrongly. Do anyone remember?
Oh, yeah. Any any guesses to who might have written that one?
Is that
John
Lloyd?
That's a John Lloyd special.
That split the office because half of us were like, oh, great, that's a really useful thing to know and interesting. The other half were like, I've never washed a raspberry. I've never considered that I'm doing it wrong. I was in that camp. But
I wash raspberries and I wash them wrong.
Oh, okay. Do you think this might have changed your life, this book, then?
It might. I think it could. I actually had a fireman on quite recently, Lee Hosey Pickett, and his book's about does offer you ways to save your life in the event of a fire. But I think that raspberry advice is more useful because, you know, I'm definitely going to have another raspberry and I'm probably not going to be in a fire. So I think this book has changed my life more. I'd like to see the universe where I didn't read the raspberry entry.
And that's another good use for...
you die of some sort of raspberry poison. <Yeah.
laughs> maybe wetter water would be a good you know, thing to wash raspberries with as well.
You're right. Mm-hmm. Get it all together. Oh, go on, sorry.
I've just to say, I've always wanted to do a QI book of weird life hacks like that, because there are various little things that come up over the years where you change your behavior. I think the best one for me was when Dan Schreiber, one of our other colleagues, found out for our podcast that we've been tying our shoelaces wrong, and a study was done to show if you tied your shoelaces the opposite way, they won't untie themselves. And ever since, I've tied my shoelace the opposite way. Now, I've never been as good at it, so I look like a five-year-old when I tie them up, but they don't come undone all day. Wow. And it's little life hacks like that can change your world.
There's a thing on the next series of QI, isn't there, where it's how to eat a beef, how to eat a burger.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember because it's a picture of me in the image, which I think I'm wearing this shirt as well.
There's anyway, two ways, aren't there?
Yeah, you turn your burger upside down because the top is usually thicker than the bottom, so the juices won't like disintegrate the bread. And then when you hold it, you use your little pinky fingers on the bottom of the burger, and that's so that when you bite it, the stuff doesn't shoot out of the other end.
You will get kicked out of McDonald's if anyone sees you doing that. So odd.
It's the advice basically just to eat everything upside down, because that's the banana advice as well. That Ben Moore told me that.
Fact, yes.
That if you eat a banana upside down, that's the better way to eat it.
Do you mean you're upside down or the banana's upside down?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess either. I guess as long as one of you stays the same way up as you usually are, then the other one turning around is.
There's a question in this book, isn't there, about whether you can eat upside down?
Yeah,
and we say you probably shouldn't do it because you might choke, but actually it will be fine.
Yeah, which I thought we shouldn't have said. Health and safety gone mad, I reckon. The whole point is you are safe to eat upside down. So I don't think you will choke because, you've got lots of drawstrings going down your digestive system or sphincters, which, you know, stop the food falling back out. So hang upside down, eat your bananas all you want.
Yeah, so this book really could change your life if you take that advice and choke to death on your next meal. So that's good. Good to see. Okay, I thought there was something else coming there, but I was wrong. Look, we were talking about this. It's difficult interviewing three people on a very dodgy line that keeps on breaking up. We discussed this before we started recording, but I wanted to ask how many, as you said, everyone asked you, how many people have written this book? How many are in the team of elves? I can count 15 and a dog, but I've heard 16.
That's definitely how many there are in the fellowship. There's more than that. So there's at least like a dozen who come in the office and are based around here. But then we've also got a set of international stringer elves, as John calls them. So from very around the world and working remotely. And because it's the kind of thing you can do remotely, you know, it's a lot of sitting and reading and delving into a really deep subject. Yeah.
Although of the ones of us who come in and chat to Zoe Ball and glean these questions, I think 16 sounds about right,
doesn't it? So, yeah.
We usually do it in a pair. I mean, you've done the count, so this is a test question, isn't it, to make sure we haven't forgotten some poor employee.
Well, I've counted on the picture, but that's a lot of people to write one. But, you know, it's quite difficult to make money out of books. And I know these books are presumably selling pretty well. But if there's 16 people and, you know, everyone else, Zoe Balls must be taking a big cut for her introduction. Millions.
It is one of like several things we're doing in a week. We don't like just write the book for like several months because we've obviously got the TV show, the podcasts and like all the other stuff. So it's, you know, that's like one thing on your to-do list for the week is to write your questions for the book.
And, they all cross fertilize obviously. The more facts, you know, the more you can go. All right. Are you ever worried about, I mean, you've written you as the QI elves and QI series over the many years it's been on. There's been a lot of books, so there must be some repetition of facts in there. Or do you have a database? I know you do on the No Such Thing as a Fish.
We have a database.
We've got a database.
Yeah, we actually had a tool for a while that we developed that was like a fact comparison tool. Because when we were writing the fact books, which were just these lists of facts of kind of written in kind of little like poetic ways, when we got to like writing the fifth book, it was really hard to like check whether we'd used them in any of the previous four books. So we got our IT guy to build a little tool that compares every fact with every other fact and point out ones that are worded really similarly.
But we have all of the scripts of QI, don't we?
Yeah, everything's in
place, all the books and all that kind of stuff. So we try our level best not to repeat ourselves too much.
Sure.
Except in person, where I'm doing it on a daily basis.
Yeah, I know about three facts and I roll them out all the time. Yeah.
I hope so. But some of the ones that are just throwaway feel like there's an entry about the practicality of Cinderella slippers, which I think is just a sentence that they weren't practical and they broke when they tried to make them. But that seems like an interesting question that could have been a whole entry rather than a throwaway.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you've got to condense them. But I that's one of those where I really like it when you have a question and you do find out a scientist has done what seems like a quite pointless experiment because they did actually subject the slippers to that, didn't they? And yeah, like the one where I think we asked, do fish get seasick? And it turns out there's a German scientist who brought fish up in an aeroplane and then nosedived the aeroplane deliberately to see what happened to them and then looked at them and said, yeah, they look like they're having a bad time. They look pretty nauseous to me. I reckon they do therefore get travel sick. And it's just like, what are these scientists doing? I mean, answering our questions apparently, but...
My favorite experiment from the book was the team that wanted to work out how ants measure distance because they take the same journeys over and over again, obviously, when they find food and they go up and down the nest and they leave pheromones and do all these sorts of things. The hypothesis was that they count their steps basically, so they know that the food they're getting is 245 steps away. And to test this, they glued stilts to ants' feet so that their step would be longer. And it worked. The ant just massively overshot its destination because it counted the steps, which is so mean. And I think that it was even, I don't think we put it in the book, but there was an even more horrible side to the experiment where they cut the legs shorter.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, and so I'm just double check. Yeah, no, it's not nice. Oh, sorry.
I mean, I did like the idea of the ant stilts, whose job it was to make
ant stilts. Is whimsical and fun. Yeah, no.
Let's see how they do with no legs and no brain. Let's stamp on them. See how they survive.
They get really lazy. They don't go at all.
Let's burn. I used to burn ants as a child. So and deliberately set them on fire. I'd get them onto newspaper and then set the newspaper on fire.
Wow. So,
and not even in the name of science.
No, just in the name of being a horrible little cunt.
Wow. Yeah, you're a Roald Dahl creation. That is terrible.
It was fun. It was fun to watch them die.
You've halved your listenership.
How many books have QI put out? Do you know that? The answer to that question? There must be, because it's been rolling along for decades.
I've been involved in, I think, 13. So far, right. Maybe 13 or 14, and there were a couple before I was.
Yeah, I think pretty much like 20, over 20 now, I reckon.
Pushing 20.
Yeah.
There was also, there's been so many different kinds of books coming out. So that's sort of fascinating. It's this industry off of all the work you do. And, you know, and as you say, it's in so many varied forms now as well. But it is interesting that what starts as a TV show, I suppose, or a radio show could go on to spawn this kind of cottage industry of its own. I mean, it's cottage industry.
It began as a book before a TV show. It was supposed to be a book. Yeah, right. So John's big idea was that we would make like the interesting encyclopedia. Yeah, so we would have an encyclopedia of things beginning with A, but they would only be the interesting bits. And then I think sort of he went to pitch it as a TV show, not thinking that it would fly originally, hoping but not thinking. But then they asked for the TV show.
Yeah.
And then I think John really would love to still write that encyclopedia of interesting things.
Yeah. Yeah.
We did think about one year doing the Book of Q, didn't we? Just like an encyclopedia of just things beginning with Q, but it never quite happened.
Yeah. And of course that works because it's good to start in the middle. Like whenever people do encyclopedias and dictionaries, they want to start in the middle of the alphabet because you're a bit ropey at first and you know, you mystify an aardvark and you look like an idiot. But if you mystify, you know, snow, no one's going to notice.
Cause yeah. Because when you buy a dictionary, you always read from the beginning to see how good it is.
Well, that's an interesting question about this book, because it sort of is, again, it's a sort of toilet book, really, isn't it? It's not a book. I mean, I sat down and read it from cover to cover, but it's one that you really...
That was a long toilet break.
It was. I love the toilet. What can I say? it's something that you kind of want to dip into and have somewhere rather than... you know, and there's an index so you can choose your questions and all that sort of stuff at the beginning. Do you think people are, is that how you imagine people using the book? Or do you think about how it's read and how people will use it?
I think toilet book is right. In fact, I've just realised we should definitely do the thing which they used to do in the 19th century to, it was like a gardening book or something. Anyway, where you put a hole in the corner of the book so people can reuse it as loo roll afterwards. But yeah, I think some of the best books you read are on the loo. I would say, I've just had an idea though for what else you can use it for. If you're going on a date, right, and you have no idea, it's a first date, no idea what to talk about, I feel like this is a good one to just have on the tube on the way there. Emergency conversation starters.
Emergency questions, great idea.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's certainly better than on this promotional podcast for our book suggesting people use it as toilet paper.
What's that? Emergency questions.
That's my original. That's exactly it. But no, I think this, well, you know, I can never retain jokes either, but I never really retain facts, and you obviously will have the brains where you can retain them. So I think that's a good thing, because I don't know if going on a date and going, do you know you're probably washing raspberries incorrectly?
It didn't work.
One thing about the order, actually, is that Sarah Lloyd, who is John Lloyd's wife, who is like one of the bosses of QI, it was her decision of the order that everything would go in this book. We wrote all of the questions and she was the one who went, well, this would go nicely after this, and this would go nicely after that. So I think, you know, there's been a lot of love gone into the order of the book. So people should read it from cover to cover.
Yeah, it's definitely designed. You can look up a question and look up the index so you can use it as a reference book. But she did, like Sarah did, print out the entire book and lie it on the floor and go completely insane trying to find a flow of all of this completely random information. And she did it. So it's amazing.
Yeah. Don't render her work pointless.
So read it. You have to read it from cover to cover.
And it ends on the question that sort of came a little bit out of your idea of an encyclopedia of interesting things, is how do you define if something is interesting, because it's what's interesting to me is not necessarily interesting to someone else. So it is, that's quite a philosophical question to more or less end the book on. But
yeah, that comes out of, I think, when you start QI research, which is the core thing you do, is that, like, when you come to the company, you spend at least some of your week doing pure research, sitting down, reading, visiting museums, something, trying to find that material for QI. You get an induction from John, who sort of sits down and talks to you about the philosophy of the company and the ethos and how it works and how you do research. And I don't think anyone's ever had the same conversation twice. I think if you compare them, they're all, it's a really, really interesting experience. But I think that's the, like, super condensed conclusion.
Yeah.
So it's just really nice to end the book on.
Basically, everything's interesting if you look at it the right way.
Yeah.
That's the
idea of QI.
But with some facts thrown in, like, I find it extraordinary that, and I think this might be the final fact of the book, that Latin the Romans didn't have a word for interesting. What does that mean? They didn't have a concept of interesting. They weren't interested in anything. They were pretty interesting themselves. What's going on there?
That is, I suppose it's anything that would, they are good conversation starters when you have something like that. And I suppose it's when you spend your whole life looking at facts, if things are still surprising you after all this time, that's quite amazing as well, isn't it? That you can be surprised by something, Anna, or what were the most surprising things for the rest of you?
Yeah. Well, that's the
good question.
Yeah, it's
question.
Like, we should have thought about that, shouldn't we, before we came on?
Like, yeah, yeah.
To buy time, I will say that, I mean, it's a cliche, but every single day is a surprise at QI. It's the opposite of a marriage. Every single day, you learn something exciting and new about what you're doing.
Yeah.
Also, we don't require the total computing power of CERN to keep it alive. So.
The interesting thing that I found recently, which is not in the book, and then we'll come to the book, is that, you know, these, like, meat-free burgers that are really kind of, they're just like meat.
Yeah.
There's a load of companies that make them, but quite a few of the companies, their burgers are tested on animals. So even though they're vegan, they're tested on animals. And the reason is because a lot of them are made with GM crops and you need to test them before you can feed them to humans. Right. And so if you go on some of their websites, they're like, you know, the rats, they were really looked after. We used the minimum that we could use. We're really sorry. There's nothing else we could have done, but they had to be tested on animals.
And rats loved the burgers. They had a great time.
I mean, that sounds like an okay way. Testing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's like a nice night out for the animals.
It is. I mean, it's kind of good. It's as far as animal testing is concerned, it's probably the best. It's not setting fire to ants.
No.
Put it that way. But it also, is, I mean, it's not vegan. Technically, it's not vegan.
No, it's not vegan. But if they told you how many of the animals died after eating or what terrible things happened to them, that'd be a more interesting website, wouldn't it? But early on, we lost a few rats and gerbils.
The original arsenic burger we decided not to put on the market after some accidents.
So from the book, I remember this because we did the audio book of this the other day, just the new questions. And it was, what happens if you cross a one-humped camel with a two-humped camel?
Which
I thought was such a brilliant question. Yeah. Because everyone wants a three-humped camel, don't you?
I can't remember the answer to that. What
well, the answer is you get either a camel with one massive hump, or you get one with a very small hump, or sometimes you get one big hump with two little humps on top of it.
Like a amazing cock and balls. Yeah.
For some people, Anna, for some people.
For some people.
I did really like, we talked about everyone having unique fingerprints, even if you're a clone, but we didn't say why. And I did really love the fact that your fingerprints are partly determined by your genetics. So they will be similar if you had a clone of yourself and you were sitting next to them and you were comparing fingerprints, but they would be a bit different because your fingerprints are partially formed by your fingers pressing up against the inside of the womb when you're inside and like
when,
you're literally
when you're more doughy
creases all your fingers together, and then because your the outer and inner layers of your skin grow at different rates, it's they sort of crinkle up, and it's just amazing.
I just think
that's so nice. And yeah,
that is a good one. So how did the audiobook work? Was that, did you all come in and do a bit of the audiobook, or was it a select group of you?
It was myself and Anne Miller, who's not here today. We read the answers to the questions, but then all of the elves came in and read the actual questions themselves.
Okay.
And then all the little fun facts that you mentioned, they were all read by John Lloyd.
Okay. Terrific. Okay. Well, that would be an interesting way to take it all in as well. Usually I do have the audio. I prefer the audio book of most things. I'm not. I think maybe this is a good one to have as a book. You can listen to an audio book on the toilet though, right? And just probably choose a random chapter.
I don't see why not.
Yeah. Do both. Read along.
If you have an audio, I was going to say, if you have an audio book, you can go to the toilet wherever you like, but that's also true of a book.
But if you're in like a public toilet and the person in the cubicle next to you is going, then probably they're listening to our audio book.
Yeah.
That will probably be it. Well, look, it's a terrific book. It's out this week if you're listening to the podcast on the week of recording. Are there any other books you guys are reading that you'd, I mean, you must read a lot of books. Is there anything you'd like to recommend that's coming out soon or even from the past?
Wow. That's such a good question.
And I'm not just saying this because I know him and like him. And I know he can.
You're going to do the same one as me, aren't you?
Yeah, I must look. So Dan Schreiber, who we work with, has released a book called The Theory of Everything Else. It's his baby. He's been working on it for more than a decade, talking about it. And it is absolutely mind-blowing.
It's so good.
I have to say, it's like, I mean, everything in there, I thought, why on earth haven't you told us this before? This is incredible. So get that one next.
Read a book about the history of bowls between 1900 and 1959. And
the history of what?
Who like bowls, you know, like crown green bowling.
Oh, bowling, okay.
Yeah,
it could have been three or four different things. That I thought it was bulbs or bulls or balls.
You're absolutely right.
Or bulbs that you get off, I suppose.
Yeah, and even for people who like crown green bowling, it was unbelievable.
Did it bowl you over?
And I'm just saying that for balance against the Dan Schreiber thing.
Yeah. So maybe don't buy the bowls book. That's good to know if you're about to.
I'm halfway through Bill Bryson's Shakespeare book, and that's really good because it's sort of everything we know about Shakespeare, and it's all, we didn't know anything about him, and everything we think we know about him is really uncertain and based on tiny amounts of evidence, and it's just really interesting to find out how much we don't know about him, and you just learn so much about that era as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Well, look, thanks very much for joining me, guys. Very nice to talk to you all. Thank you very much for coming on. James, Anna and Alex, QI Elves, and buy their book, 221 QI Answers to Your Quite Ingenious Questions. And there's an intro by Zoe Ball. If you don't like ingenious questions and you like Zoe Ball, you can read a bit that Zoe Ball's written. and then use the rest as toilet paper.
You know, you just described it as 221 ingenious questions.
Did I?
I want to know which one you dropped.
He's ripped out the how to wash a raspberry.
Yeah. There was one that wasn't ingenious. Used it for. Okay, I'll try and find one that isn't ingenious. That was the blow up the moon. That's a good one. Why are so few nuts actually nuts is not an ingenious question. So there, it's 221. Sorry. Bye. Go back and rewrite it. Thank you, guys. See you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.